What's up and welcome to NExpress, GoombaStomp.com's podcast, all dedicated to Nintendo. Well, I should say mostly dedicated to Nintendo. Sometimes we like to branch out, but lately it's been all Pokemon, all Zelda, and all things good. With me, as always, is Aaron Santos.
Salutations.
Ricky D.
Hello, Tim.
And Patrick Murphy.
Hey, everybody. I can't wait to actually start talking about Pokemon and actually know something about it.
I know. You're learning already. We were just talking, and you've already beaten Misty.
Yeah.
So, two gym badges under your belt. That's pretty impressive.
I know. I'm proud of myself.
Yeah, you should be. And you're learning the super effectiveness. You're beginning to understand technical machines. It sounds like you're getting a grasp of what Pokemon is, which is great.
Basically, my life is just finally getting together. That's what's happening right now.
Basically what you're saying to me, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to not play Pokemon is to not live, essentially. As they say, we all need the sun to survive. Whoa, transition time, Pokemon Sun and Moon. That came out of nowhere. Whoa, look at that. So
almost like you had that planned, Tim. But
I know,
couldn't
I was just trying to get there. Pokemon Day was on Saturday, the 27th, and in honor of that, the Pokemon Company had a little Pokemon Direct, which is essentially a Pokemon-centered Nintendo Direct, and they celebrated the entire history of the franchise, showing off some of the more memorable moments, and then they briefly announced Pokemon Sun and Pokemon Moon, which I personally was thrilled. They didn't show anything about that game, but I'm still crazy excited for it. How about you guys? Now that you are playing Pokemon, Patrick, are you any more excited, or are you just kind of waiting to see?
All right, so I had been talking with Rick earlier on because we both just started Pokemon Yellow, the exact same game, and we at the time when we were talking, we had not yet beaten the first trainer, neither one of us, and I was saying how the game seemed really tedious to me and just really grind-heavy, but now that I've passed the first trainer, the game really picked up, and I'm starting to kind of get into collecting and strategizing with my Pokemon, even though my Pikachu is destroying everybody. I have a feeling I'm going to be picking up either X or Y after this, and
yeah,
that will have me excited for Pokemon Sun and Moon as well.
I really can't wait for you to play X and Y. The pacing is entirely different for that game. It's so much faster. It's incredible.
Oh, that's going to be good. And I can't wait to see, it just obviously looks amazing
<Yeah.
laughs> compared to this early stuff, but, yeah, I don't know anything about Pokemon Sun and Moon. I know that we had some articles put up where there was various predictions about Sun and Moon, but I look forward to at least hearing what they're about, if nothing else.
Yeah, same. Seeing some cover Pokemon, maybe.
What do you think, Tim? Because there a lot of people thought that they're going to do a direct sequel, like a Z, right? And I think you were among those, right?
Yeah, I never anticipated a Z because Junichi Masuda always said that he didn't want to be that predictable. I wrote a little article, and I kept saying Pokemon Z in quotes, kind of referring to the sequel of X and Y. Mm-hmm. And I thought they'd try to sort of shift that anticipated Pokemon game and make something sort of different. And they, quite frankly, haven't said that this isn't a sequel yet. We don't know. Some people are thinking that maybe it's the seventh generation of Pokemon based entirely on the statement that it takes place in a new world with new Pokemon or something like that. That you can find that language, the specific language, on Pokemon.com if you're curious. But I don't know. I think it's either, I personally am still leaning towards it's quote unquote Pokemon Z, or maybe even a Gold and Silver to what Red, Blue, and Yellow had, if that makes sense. I guess you guys aren't Pokemon heavy, but Aaron might know what I'm talking about, where Pokemon Gold and Silver were a new generation of Pokemon, but they were still very directly connected to the first generation, to Red, Blue, mm-hmm. and Yellow. The story was a direct continuation of that. You could actually go back to Kanto in the end of the game, which made it just the best game ever. It was kind of like a direct sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, Aaron, are you excited at all? You've been out of the Pokemon game for a little while. Is there anything that could lure you back in? Could these new games lure you back in?
There's one thing that disappointed me already, is that this is not Pokemon on console.
Oh.
So I'm a little disappointed on that one. For me right now, my expectation is a little premature. I mean, we haven't seen anything about the game. I mean, I could easily like just say like this might be the same thing like every one of them that came out since. But right now, like in like bottom lines, like my expectations are a little low.
If it was on Vita, would you buy it?
No. Well, let's put it this way too. It's never gonna show up on the Vita.
Yeah. I mean, not much is gonna show up on the Vita. Period.
Ooh, shots fired.
I don't even mean that as like an insult. I just mean the Vita's had a rough life.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, there's a little thing. There's some things that obviously the Vita did super wrong when it's messaging when it first came out. I mean, first of all, like the stupid memory cards, because yeah, they're ridiculously expensive.
Oh my god, that's what got me out of it right away.
But if I could say just shortly about the Vita, right now, it's like I've clocked in a hell of a lot more hours on the Vita than I have on the PS4. And that's saying a lot. So I think the game selection on the Vita right now are like super, and especially if you're into like old PS1 games like I am. Yeah, I clocked in quite a few hours already playing Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Can't beat those dual screens. I gotta tell you, I don't want Nintendo to go back to a single screen handheld after playing DS and 3DS. I love having two screens. It's so convenient in every single way.
We'll see how the hybrid turns out with the NX, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I can't wait to know anything more about that. I don't know. Part of me is like super satisfied with my 3DS. It's such a good console, and it sounds like we still have games coming to it, unlike the Wii U a little bit. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, if the NX happens to be the follow-up to the 3DS, or maybe just the follow-up to the Wii U, it could be great. It could be great timing.
Mm.
And who knows? The rumor is there may be a Pokemon game at the launch of the NX.
I know. Well, like, people are already wondering if Pokemon Sun and Moon are going to end up on the NX or something. Maybe the 3DS is a red herring, so to speak, when they say it's on 3DS. Maybe they're just straight up lying. Although my friend keeps talking about Pokemon Star now. He just, like, made this title up, and he's like, yeah, it's coming to NX. It's going to happen. I'm just like, okay.
It's going to be Pokemon Black Hole, actually.
Supernova or something. Whatever the case may be, a home console Pokemon game could be really good, but taking these games on the go, you guys might have noticed already that like having it in your pocket at all times, it's really, really fun, really easy.
Short play sessions, they do work pretty well with this. Like I'm not sitting down for 2 hours and playing Pokemon. It's pretty easy to go from town to town and just kind of, you know, you can play a half an hour to an hour and you're pretty good.
Yeah. Mm. Ricky, you are pretty quiet. How are you liking Pokemon / taking this news?
I am quiet. I wanted Aaron to speak a bit more this week because I felt bad for him last week. God, man, I fell for you, Aaron. Gee, I couldn't.
It's, you know, it's all right. It was your guys' time. I mean, it's just oh, weird. Man. Like,
I could understand what you guys were saying last week. It was like you guys might as well just been speaking Chinese. It was like, it was good though. It was an amazing show. It was just like, it just made me realize how like much there is to know about Pokemon. So I started playing Pokemon Yellow, and I hate you, Tim, because you should have never recommended this game to me because I have this obsession with collecting things.
Yeah, you do. You know? It's perfect like, for you. Look at this game is made for you.
No, it's not good, Tim. It's not. I mean, look at my Amiibo collection. I've been collecting things since I was a kid, and maybe that's why I never played this game, because I don't know, man. Like, I don't think I would have had time to play this game as a kid. And I'm a little scared because I started playing Pokemon Yellow. I dig it. You know, I'm a big fan of these old school games. I've been playing old school games all weekend long, including The Adventure of Link, which we're going to talk about in our main event. And I even went back and played A Link to the Past, and I was playing Pokemon Yellow. So it was a really, like, old school weekend for me. And I like it a lot. I'm a little surprised you don't like Earthbound more, because I think Earthbound is a far better game, and there's a lot of similarities between Earthbound and Pokemon, at least Pokemon Yellow. That's all I've played so far. Mm-hmm. I just think Earthbound has a better story and more interesting characters so far, but I'm still, you know, like, I'm only at the second trainer, so, you know, I've defeated Brock. I still have not defeated the second trainer. I don't know who that is, he or she. But it's interesting. It's interesting going back and playing it, because I totally understand why it's a huge, huge thing. Like, I understand why it makes billions of dollars. I understand why kids like it. Just the idea of having how many Pokemon? Like 722 that you can collect.
Right now.
Each with their own personalities and their weaknesses and their special abilities. It's pretty cool. I want to talk about it next week, like maybe dedicate our main event to Pokemon Yellow if you guys want.
Sure.
As far as the new games go, I was a little disappointed with the Direct, A, because... Once again, I felt like the internet ruined everything for us.
We need to talk about that.
Right. So it's, I mean, I get it. You know, as someone who runs a website, I understand that you want hits. You want people to visit your website. You want to be the first talking about whatever news was leaked and there are rumors. But sometimes it really takes the fun out of it, right? And so I woke up early. I was watching the Direct, which lasted like, what, 10 minutes?
Not even that long. Like, six and a half or something.
Like, what's up with holding an event in the middle of the day? Like, early in the morning, actually. It's, like, less than 10 minutes long. They don't show us any footage of any one of these two games. So I was a little disappointed. And like Aaron, I was also disappointed because I was really hoping for a Pokemon game on the Wii U. And as far as we know, we're not going to get one except for Pokemon Tournament, which is really not the same thing. So, I don't know. I'm the Pokemon world has me interested, and I can't wait to finish Pokemon Yellow because I think I want to move on. I actually think I want to move on to Black and White.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's where I stopped playing.
Well, it's because one of my favorite game critics, he actually writes for Slant Magazine, he wrote about Black and White, and they listed the 100 greatest games of all time. And these are dudes I really respect. Like, these guys know their shit. They're amazing critics, amazing writers. And Pokemon Black and White ended up really high in the list. I think it was their highest rated Pokemon game.
Interesting. So, yeah. I really enjoy the game. I'm actually almost done with the sequel. I've been playing that game really, really slowly since it came out. It's the pacing's a lot slower in that game, and there's like a lot to do, which I really enjoy. But at the same time, if you're looking for like a quicker Pokemon experience, Black and White is not the direction to go. X and Y has a lot of content, but it just, the pacing is a lot quicker. It's easier to train. Black and White's very, very slow. I'm going to talk like heavy Pokemon terminology. The pseudo legendary in the game, which is a statistically almost legendary Pokemon, he doesn't evolve to his final form until level 63 or something. So you already have all of your 8 badges and are probably in the Elite Four before you can even have that guy. So it's like the pacing's very, very steady. That game's a little grindy.
Yeah. But I think that's what made me fall off Pokemon. It was just, first of all, I felt, in a lot of ways, like Black and White did some good things. I mean, first of all, they really put a strong emphasis on story compared to the other ones. I mean, like, it's really story driven, super, super story driven.
That idea.
I did enjoy it, but to a point where it was like, I don't know, because like I just found it like the pacing super slow, and then the way I just stopped playing Pokemon was just like, I just completely forgot about it on the DS, and I just never touched it again. And then I felt no immediate need to play it again. And then from there, it kind of like, you know, it sounds sad, but like at the same time, like from there, it's like I'm done with Pokemon. Like, it still holds a special place in my heart. But the thing is, like that was sort of like the turning point where I'm like, I can't play this anymore. You know?
Sorry, Aaron, you're talking about Black and White, right?
Yeah.
But see, that is why I want to play, because I was told it has the best story. And yeah. So when I'm playing Pokemon Yellow, I can't help but think of Earthbound. And that game, I think, has like one of the greatest stories ever put to a video game. And so that is why I kind of want to go and play Black and White, because I'm like really heavily invested in a story when it comes to video games, you know, just like movies. And maybe it's because my background is movies, but I don't care how good the graphics are. I don't care how fun the game is. If it has a great story, it's an added bonus. Like, The Last of Us is maybe my favorite game of all time.
Well, that's everybody's favorite best game of all time.
I don't know about everyone's, but it's up there. But it's up there not only because it's fun to play, but let's face it, it's the story that comes first and the characters.
Yeah, so I don't disagree with you.
I want to play Black and White.
See, I think that Black and White probably do have like slightly more complex characters. There's like some intriguing questions about is what the core of Pokemon it is as a franchise, like battling monsters. Is that acceptable? Is this the same as like dog fighting? There's some really interesting inquiries in that game, which is like kind of surprising to get from a kid-friendly franchise. But I ultimately like the original story better. While it's simple, I think it's appropriate for the tone of the game. And the sequel, Gold and Silver, probably do an even better job of making you like not like Team Rocket and want to stop them.
I was going to say, is there a story in the first one?
Yeah, you'll get there.
I was just going to say the same thing, Patrick.
I've run into Team Rocket, so I am now aware that there's a villain in this game. But there's not, I mean, there's not a ton of story.
Dude, there's no story. The story is no more deeper than Double Dragon. It's like, I mean,
Double Dragon might
story?
Be deeper, actually.
Maybe, perhaps, yeah. Like, what story? Like, that's my problem with Pokemon Yellow. Like, I am enjoying playing the game because, like, basically I play the game when I go to sleep. It's like I lie down, I open up my 3DS, I start playing Pokemon. I'm like, I'm going to play for half an hour, 2 hours later. I'm still not asleep because I'm still playing Pokemon. But it's sort of like the game I play when I want to wind down. You know, I'm not going to wake up and run to my 3DS to play it. But that is the most disappointing aspect of the game, is there is no story. I understand the game was targeted specifically at a younger audience, but it's just disappointing for me because perhaps I'm 20 years too late into the series. So although I like it, I'm not crazy about it yet. Like, it's more of a curiosity.
Yeah, you might be a little disappointed in terms of story, although I would highly recommend watching the show Pokemon Origins, which takes the game and turns it into a 4-episode miniseries. And I think that does a really good job of drawing out the characters and emphasizing the strengths of the story and really like demonstrating what the original Pokemon games were all about.
But that doesn't make the game better. I mean, to have a series to flesh out these characters and to give it an actual story is kind of a flaw to the actual game. I was reading up about the movies and the TV shows, and I listened to your last podcast, the Game Boys podcast, which I recommend everyone listen to, by the way. It's really good. And all of it interests me. Like, the whole lore, the mythology of Pokemon interests me, but as a whole, as an individual game, Pokemon Yellow, to me, is just kind of like a kid's game. And so I'm interested in learning more because, you know, we do a Nintendo podcast, but I'm not yet completely sold, Tim. I'm not yet completely sold.
I will say this. I'm kind of the opposite of you, I think, when it comes to games, Rick. And even though we both come from a movie background, like, for me, story in video games, I've never gotten really attached to storytelling in video games because I don't think they can do it nearly as well as any book or movie that I've seen or read. I have yet to run across a video game that can tell a story. I think we give video games a huge pass on storytelling that we would never give a book or a movie. That's my personal opinion, but I actually just play them just for the actual game. So the gameplay is what matters to me the most, and I like how the game has picked up. It's finally caught my interest as far as the gameplay goes. After I, you know, beat the first trainer, so I'm kind of getting more into it. And if it can, if the sequels build on that, then I'm all for it. I'll probably stay away from Black and White then, like Grim Death itself, because for the way you describe it, is the opposite of what I want out of a game. I like the way you described X and Y. Quick, fast paced. That's what I want. I want gameplay.
Yeah,
and
you definitely need to go for X and Y. You'll love it.
Yeah, the story to me in Pokemon just doesn't even really matter. It's funny that it doesn't have one. I'm kind of surprised that it doesn't have one, but not really. But for me personally, it doesn't matter.
We need to also consider that, like, who published this game? Nintendo. What kind of stories do they deliver? Like, this is going to be the same level of story that we get from Zelda, that we get from Mario. I would say it's more Zelda in terms of, like, the story, the level of the story that's delivered. It's there.
Is
it? It's, like, a little bit loose.
Link's Awakening had a much better story than Pokemon Yellow.
Well, because it had a story.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, Tim, like, again, this game, like, Pokemon Yellow came out 20 years ago. Not too far away from some of the original Zelda games, which we love. And again, I have to compare it to games like Earthbound and even a Final Fantasy series or Dragon Warriors or any of these games that do have stories. And Patrick, it's not an opinion. You are correct. Like, video games just have not reached that peak yet where they can tell stories as well as television and or movies and or books. But I think they will. eventually. Like, I think, like I've said this on the show many times, I think the video game industry right now is, when you compare it to, say, like, the film industry, it's maybe, like, the 1930s of the film industry. Like, it hasn't even found half of its potential yet. And I think what's happening now is we're seeing a shift in the medium where they are focusing on storytelling. I mean, we spent 55 minutes reviewing Life is Strange at the end of last year, one of our best reviews, and that game is all story, you know? The Last of Us, again.
That did that.
No, it's not. I mean, look, I'm playing Alan Wake right now. Yeah. You know, it's an amazing story. there's still a lot of potential yet.
I don't think that it's not that I don't think the video games can get you immersed, because I think that they do, and even the best Zelda games can get you immersed in their world, and that's a form of storytelling. I'm not sure that video games should go in the direction of movies. Like the kind of game that Life is Strange is, I don't think is where video games should head, because it's like they want to be movies, and movies are movies. You don't need to be movies, you're video games. You're a completely different medium, and you should do things that keep you unique, and not try to do things that another medium does that makes another medium unique.
Yeah, but sometimes it is unique to have that story, the storytelling in movies, and at the same time make it as interactive as you can't, as an experience that you can't have in a movie.
Yeah, it's well,
I think that's when it gets interesting.
Storytelling is a great bonus when it's done well in a video game. The problem is, like, you'll never be as immersive as a movie because it's a video game and because you're pushing a button and there are always awkward moments in video games.
Totally disagree with you.
There's no way that you can tell a story in a game
you can in a movie. You can't look into the future and say that. And first of all, like, the core difference between a video game like Life is Strange and a movie is, in the video game, you do control the characters, and despite the fact that there really is only two endings to that game.
Yeah, two.
So it's predetermined, right? But you still feel like you're making you're making decisions for these characters. You can't do that with a movie. It's the director's say. It's whoever made the movie, it's their final say.
You're invested in the character.
So you become invested in the character in different ways, though, and so you can't really compare the two. Like, when you sit down and watch a movie, you become invested in the story because you find yourself just transformed into that world. If so, that's a good thing. So not always. If you go see an Adam Sandler movie, you're probably, it'll be looking at your watch.
I don't think you're watching the right Adam Sandler movies.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, you can, this is what I could say. Like, the ability to choose, like, and make decisions in a game, to me, is no more interactive than a Choose Your Own Adventure book was. And Choose Your Own Adventure books never told stories as well as a regular book, because they had to have different endings and different paths. And therefore, the writers weren't allowed to construct a really rich story. And that's the way that games have... Like, I heard you guys talk about Life is Strange, but personally, I just wasn't impressed by any of it. Nothing made me want to go play it. And neither... I don't want to play The Walking Dead. I don't care. Because I know what they have to do in order to write those stories, and they have to make a lot of compromises. Movies will be able to always be able to tell richer stories than video games, because that's all they're doing. They're just telling the story, but video games have to focus on other things like gameplay. You have to control a character. Yeah. Therefore, you can be taken out of the story at any moment that anything awkward happens. If you walk up to an object and you push a button and nothing happens, you're immediately taken out. All of a sudden, you realize I am playing a video game here.
Yeah,
and bad movies will do things that make you realize you're watching a movie. Video games, you'll always know you're playing a video game. It's never going to be quite the same as reading a book where something happens completely in your mind, or watching a seamless, perfectly made movie up on the screen that has you completely enwrapped.
That's again, like, you can't look into the future, so you do not know. I think the opposite. I think it will get to that point. Like, I think we're going to get to the point where they will take something like virtual reality, in which it won't necessarily be like a football helmet that you're going to put over your head. But I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Life is Strange, directed by Kathryn Bigelow. Movies like Hurt Locker, whatever, fantastic director. Wait, she also did Point Break.
Not Life is Strange, you mean Strange Days?
Strange Days, that's what I said. That movie is like a good example of what we could maybe get one day in the future. You do not know. I mean, I think, like I said, video games have not even reached 50% of their potential. Like, maybe not even 30% of their potential.
Like Lucy.
So we... It's like what?
Like Lucy.
just yeah, go on. Yeah, and then the NPC is going to start cursing at you.
Well, I mean, look at Pokemon Go, okay? Going back to Pokemon, I want to talk about this. I'm more excited for Pokemon Go than I am for Sun and Moon, because... Like, I like the idea of collecting these Pokemon, much like I like to collect amiibo. Why? I don't know, because maybe I need to get a life. But anyways, I'm not entirely sure, and I don't think anyone really is sure what Pokemon is going to let us do and not do, but the idea of traveling the world and or even just walking around the city you live in and being able to find and collect Pokemon is a cool idea, especially if they somehow incorporate some kind of gameplay into it. Like, that is cool because you become more so part of the game because you have to go out, like, leave your house, walk around, go to specific places on specific days and dates to find specific Pokemon, be it mythical Pokemon or legendary Pokemon. I'm not sure what the difference is. Stuff like this interests me. Like, to me, this is like a prime example of what I love about Nintendo as a whole. Like, I know Game Freak is the developer of this game, but they're still like heavily connected with Nintendo, and I'm pretty sure when it comes to them making decisions, it goes 50-50, right? Nintendo's always finding new ways to push the video game industry, be it with the Power Glove and or Virtual Boy and or the Wii controller, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I don't want to talk about the NX right now. I'm very excited to learn what the NX is. I'm also extremely worried. It could end up being like the best console Nintendo's ever released. It could also end up being like the worst console Nintendo ever releases.
Well, yeah, it could easily mean the end of Nintendo.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the end. I think
end of Nintendo as a hardware maker.
I think they can still survive.
People have been saying that since the SNES. Yeah. I don't know. I think people love to be dramatic and they love to say like, oh, this is it for Nintendo. Like, if they don't get this right, like, you guys said that with the Wii, and look what happened. It sold a ton, and now we're fine. And then you said we're going to fail. Like, Nintendo's done if the Wii U fails. The Wii U did okay. It didn't do great. Nintendo's still around. I don't know. I think people like to be really doom and gloom about it. Personally,
Ricky,
I think you're highlighting where Pokemon shines as a story. It's not about the narrative that Pokemon gives you. It's about the story you write as an individual trainer, what Pokemon you choose to collect, what you choose to perceive as your goal in the game. Is your goal to catch them all? Is your goal to stop Team Rocket? Is your goal to be the very best? The game never says, like, oh, this is your one and only goal. It says go. Like, you're just a kid in a town, and now you can collect Pokemon. So I think, like, it's interesting that you don't like narrative and you're talking about Pokemon Go when you're highlighting the strength of the series, which is it is intentionally narratively loose so that you can write the game as you want it. Like, my friend Ryan, who I do Game Boys with, is having the time of his life replaying this because he says he's the new fighting gym leader. He's playing with only fighting Pokemon, and he's writing this own narrative where he is taking this extra challenge and adding these extra risks with, like, you know, he's super weak to psychic Pokemon, and he's about to go fight the psychic gym leader. But he says, like, no, the fighting gym leader will not be defeated by the likes of Sabrina. Like, it's just the funniest thing in the world. And he's making this extra narrative that I don't think anyone ever intended.
That's what I was going to say before, actually, when I was talking about why I understand why kids like it, because it's all about using your imagination. I get it. Like, I totally get it. Again, I'm not very far into the game. Let's be fair. I just started playing Pokemon. I just expected more of a story. But that's because I've read about the mythology and the lore of Pokemon. Like, for example, Tim, are Pokemon evil? Can they be evil?
And that's like a prominent storyline within the first movie of Pokemon, and that's just it, is that that's like an element of the story, but that's just one piece, which is why I like Pokemon Origins so much, is because it takes different pieces of the overall narrative and it presents them episodically. They're somewhat united, but they're also, they can exist on their own, and that's what's unique about Pokemon, is that it's not like Earthbound. It's not the story of a child trying to, like, mentally deal with his life, which is kind of how I interpret Earthbound. It's not involved in the psyche of a child. It's about a child going on an adventure, whatever that entails. And so it's like a very different way of presenting a story. And it's kind of like The Legend of Zelda. Like, when I play it, Link really likes to hit cuckoos, and I think that's part of his character. I totally give that to Link. Like, he's not inherently into chopping at cuckoos. Like, he doesn't hate chickens, but when I embody Link, he definitely loves it when they try to kill him. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what do you have against chickens, Tim?
Yeah, I have nothing against it, but the fact that they all attack me is so fun.
Really? Because I listened to the last show, and you hate the Pokemon chicken dude.
That's
anyhow,
right.
That's true. You guys might be onto something.
Right. So I think when Pokemon Yellow really won me over to the point where I actually want to sit down and play it for, say, more than like an hour, it's when I realized that when you get a new ability, you have to actually decide which of the four you're going to keep. And you can only hold on to like six Pokemon. So like there's limitations. And I like the fact that it makes you choose. And you don't always know if you're going to make the best choice for you as a player. I thought that was really cool. And as soon as I found Jigglypuff, you know, because I know who Jigglypuff is, I was like, oh, no way. You know, I don't know how you get him because he's just like sitting in like some kind of like hut or something. It helps that I know a bit about Pokemon, but I'm just saying, like, to get into Pokemon now, when you're an adult, it's hard unless if you're somehow involved in the Nintendo community.
Yeah,
it's also hard because how simplistic the battle system is in a lot of ways.
I mean,
that I don't mind.
Relatively, it gets more complicated as the series progresses, but it's still got the elemental system. It's still got extra like damage output when you're using your elemental type. So it's
like what they call the rock paper scissors system, though. I mean, it's like once you figure it out, everyone's elemental weakness, it just almost becomes like automatic.
This is a Game Boy game, though.
Yeah,
but they still kept that same. But they still kept that same formula throughout.
Yeah, I actually don't mind that whatsoever. I wasn't looking for Xenoblade. Let's put it that way. I already played Xenoblade. This is a nice change of pace from Xenoblade. Kind of like how Mario and Luigi Paper Jam was a nice, easy change of pace. Like, battle wasn't too complex in that either, but it was still fun. And I still find this to be kind of fun, too. Even if I'm just absolutely cheesing guys by laying waste to them with Pikachu, an overpowered Pikachu, I still find it to be kind of fun. There's still some challenge. I mean, I've run across some challenging stuff.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that the combat is not fun. I'm just saying that when you strip down to its core, it's not as complex as the other JRPGs you're going to play out there, though.
No.
Let me ask you a question, Tim, before we move on. Why is this the most expensive Pokemon game to buy? Because it's like selling for like $300 to $600 on eBay. It's insane.
Is it really that expensive?
Yeah, man.
Pokemon Yellow?
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know, I probably got a pretty limited release. It's retro. It was one of the first ones. It's many people's favorite one. And it was, I don't know, it's an amazing, amazing game. It's kind of like, why does something like Banjo-Kazooie sell for so much online? Because it was an amazing game at that time, and now there's just not a whole lot around. So I'm guessing it's the same thing. People get really nostalgic.
Okay, I was just wondering if it was like limited, it was like a limited edition, because isn't Pokemon Yellow essentially a remake of like Blue and or Red?
Yeah, it's essentially the director's cut, if you will.
Well, it was basically, Pokemon Yellow was made because of before the TV show. I mean, Red and Blue came out before the TV show hit North America, so people weren't too familiar about it. So they decided to make Yellow to, again, probably sell more because of how popular the TV show was.
Playing off Pikachu, because everybody
basically playing off Pikachu.
Then you, in that game, you basically are Ash.
I mean,
you can be, right? You could choose to name your guy Ash or somebody else. I don't remember. I'm Ash, and the other guy's Gary. That's how I.
Yeah, which is straight out of the show. Whereas, like, if you're ever my little brother, your name's probably Smiley Face, and your rival's name is Dickhead or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think the best rival name I've ever heard was my friend once named his character Ash and then named his rival Jack Ash, which was the best PG censorship in the world, but just so fitting. I don't know, I loved it.
Well, I love the 8-bit Pikachu sound that pops on the screen every time the game starts up. So
you know what the best part of this game is? It's the music, man.
The music's so good.
The theme song is incredible. Pretty love catchy. It.
Just wait. Have you guys have all read that horror article I wrote about like the urban legends surrounding these games?
Oh yes, yes. The missing no and oh yeah, the that's right. The curse.
Yeah. Just wait until you get to that city. That song will like don't play that in a dark room because that song is creepy. But it just speaks to the power of the soundtrack. It's phenomenal and it's all 8-bit. Written by the game director, so it's one of the last things.
This game is going to become The Ring or something like that.
That urban legend is basically what that is. I love that.
Did you notice that there's a bird in the game who, I think when you talk to him, he says tweet, and I was just like wondering if whoever invented Twitter was like a Pokemon fan.
It's funny that you bring this up, because I was in the last episode talking about how I made like all of my phone contacts Pokemon sprites, and I made Twitter Pidgey, and I still think it's funny.
We'll get back to Pokemon next week.
Yeah, we should do a far more thorough like comparison between Ricky's favorite Earthbound and Pokemon Yellow, because I think there are some strong similarities, but the series definitely go their different routes for sure. So I can't wait to talk more about that. Before we move into our next segment, though, we're going to give you, I guess, a microscopic review of Shadow Puppeteer, because that went way in depth, which both speaks to the quality of Pokemon Yellow and to its ability to tickle the minds of people 20 years later. So how are you guys liking Shadow Puppeteer? Have you guys beaten it?
I have. I think have you played it, Aaron?
No. We got the code from Shadow Snow Cannon, and then I sent it to you guys. Right. Because honestly, like I don't do co-op, so there's no way I was gonna give this a shot.
Okay.
So I didn't play it myself either, because I was told that the game is best suited for co-op. So I skipped out on this, so I won't be talking about it. But tell us why, Patrick.
Well, I mean, this is what I found, Tim, and I don't know what your experience was, but co-op, I think it's a really, really fun puzzle game. I mean, it's not going to blow anybody's minds, but I had a really good time with it, and there were moments that I thought were really inspired and very, very creative with light and shadow, and the way you could, you know, push a box towards a light source, and the shadow of the box would grow bigger, and that was how you would get your shadow puppet, you know, the shadow character up on a higher platform. So basically the concept is, for anybody who doesn't know what Shadow Puppeteer is, basically you play a young boy and his shadow, and the shadow can only move on a 2D plane up against walls, whereas the boy can move in the 3D world, you know, all over the place. And between the two of them, you have to work together in order to overcome a series of obstacles. And there's a kind of a bland story. It's sort of a token story, I would say, about an evil guy that steals the entire town's shadows, and you're going to get them all back, or something like that. But yeah, I thought as a co-op, you know, one person plays the shadow, one person plays the little boy. It makes for a really, really interesting game, a couch co-op game, where you're kind of talking to each other, trying to figure out how to solve these puzzles. They're basically putting you in a room, and you just have to make your way through the room, and it could be kind of interesting. Single player, I didn't find to be as engaging, because it can get kind of complicated. There are moments where platforming is required, and there are even some auto-scroll levels, and I did not like playing those in the single player, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I think it's really just a co-op game. I think they put single player there as like a courtesy, but I don't think I'd ever even touch it as a solo player. Because it's all about controlling the boy and his puppet simultaneously. So, I personally really like the aesthetic of the game. Like, normally when you get indie developed games, often they're 8-bit or they're retro, because it's a little bit easier to do. I think this game looks really, really good despite being indie developed. So that's really cool. And like, the soundtrack's also perfectly fitting, so that like really gets you in the mood to walk through this sort of eerie Tim Burton-esque frontier, if you will.
Can I tell you guys a story? So I posted a trailer for the video game on our website, and in my little, say, like 700-word, I guess, like recap/capsule review of what the game is supposed to be, I wrote that from what I heard, from what I was told, the game had problems when it was released on Steam, right? And I was told that the same problems the game had were similar to the game which we completely trashed not too long ago, called Typo Man. So, which has sort of like a similar visual style, And so that is why I was a little cautious and I didn't really want to pick up the game. Then I was told it really only works well on co-op mode. So I'm not yet sold on this game, guys. Like, sell me on it.
If you're going to play single player, then I don't think you need to buy this game. If you have somebody to play with, this game is really fun. I enjoyed it quite a bit playing with my brother. It was a good time. We had a lot of laughs, a lot of aha moments, which is always good in a puzzle game. But yeah, if you're a single player, no, I wouldn't recommend this to anybody who's just playing single player. This is a co-op puzzle game. That's what it is. And as far as the stuff that they fixed, what they did is they inserted some more checkpoints. They're very generous with checkpoints, so I was never...
Extremely.
Even though the controls are a little sticky, not as bad as Typo Man's, you'll have some cheap deaths every now and again, but the game never frustrated me because the checkpoints are so generous that you're not really backtracking or you're not really like having to play anything over again.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing where it's really easy to die, especially if you're going for all the little orbs that you can collect. I don't even know why I'm collecting them, but I was.
They unlock some different. They unlock artwork and some music tracks.
Yeah, I think I just had to go look for those features. I had probably unlocked them. I just never bothered. I found that the spatial reasoning for the 3D player, which is typically me, can be really awkward at times.
Yeah, there's no shadow. That's why.
Exactly. Exactly. They don't pull a Mario. You don't know that the shadow... Like, you know how Mario in 64 had the shadow of question box so that you always knew where you needed to line up? This doesn't have that because the shadows are on the wall, and so it's kind of tricky at times, but because it's so generous with checkpoints, it's not frustrating at all. You just kind of jump at it until you get it, and there's very little consequence to falling to your death. It's just like, oh, well, let's try that again.
Yeah, you just start whatever part of the puzzle you were on, you just start doing it again, and it's really not that, you're not finding yourself going like, oh my god, I can't believe I have to go back and play through this all again. That never happens.
You're not going to get frustrated at your friend for when he goofs up on a jump or what have you. So I think it's a very friendly co-op experience. It's not like playing something that's very difficult and tactically oriented. It's more some very simple, not always simple, but fun puzzle solving together.
Yeah, it never gets tense. And like you say, I mean, a lot of it is simplistic, I guess you could say, but it's still clever enough that it's fun to do. But there are some really good, neat ideas that they threw in. There were a couple times where I was saying, you know, my brother and I were saying to each other, that's really cool. Like that. Yeah. Once we figured out how to do something, we were like, oh my god, that's actually a really cool idea.
When the shadow influences the world around the 3D player, that's a cool concept. It's a great idea for a game, and I think they execute it pretty well.
Yeah. Yep, me too.
Okay, see, now Tim likes this game, so that's a good thing. Because the thing is, the reason why I'm confused, and this is an ongoing joke here, is, but Patrick, I think you gave the game like a 7 out of 10, if I'm not mistaken.
Like a 7.5, yeah. It didn't blow my mind or anything, but I thought it was good. It has a couple of, you know...
Wait, Shadow Puppeteer?
Wait, but you also gave Typo Man a 7.5.
No, I gave Typo Man a 7. See, I actually enjoyed that game a lot more than you guys.
I still don't get that.
That's why I can't listen to your reviews anymore, Patrick. Because it's like,
what are you talking about?
Typo Man. Oh man, I don't.
Typo Man.
I'm still recovering from Typo Man.
I'm not the only person to give Typo Man a 7 out of 10. By the way, check the Metacritic. It's not like that game has got a 30 or something. Typo Man's not nearly as bad as you guys think it is.
It's not good. If listeners just trust everyone else on the podcast, Patrick's great. But like, just listen to his opinions on Majora's Mask, and you know that he's a little wacky. So
go read my article on my least favorite Zeldas. I rip into Majora's Mask pretty good. I can't wait to do the podcast on it because then I'll get to be really eloquent in my argument.
This is probably the best segue we could have because we are going to talk about one of the most controversial Zelda titles ever made, which I know. Probably a good half of the audience of this game wishes that it wasn't canon. I have heard some very, very strong opinions about Zelda 2, the game that never should have been. So, we are going to take a break. When we come back, you will hear from the cast of N-Express our personal opinions about Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. So stick around.
My real test. train them is my cause. I will travel across the land, searching far and wide. Each Pokemon to understand the power that's inside.
Pokemon, gotta catch 'em all.
It's you and me. I know it's my destiny.
Pokemon,
oh, you're my best friend.
In a world we must defend. Pokemon, gotta catch 'em all.
Our hearts so true. Our courage will pull us through. You teach me and I'll teach you.
Legend of Zelda continues. Defeat your enemies. Save the kingdom. Use your sword.
I cannot help you.
Zelda!
Find the crystal.
Rescue the princess.
Zelda! Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. And now, get into the latest Nintendo games. Ghostbusters 2 and Iron Sword. Only from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power.
Welcome back to N-Express, where we are continuing our celebration of the 30th anniversary of Zelda. We have far from forgotten our promise to slowly review the main series games. So without further ado, here is our discussion of Zelda 2, which is a game that many, many people hate, like outright hate. Probably feel as strong as I do about Typo Man. Some solid ideas, a cool variation on gameplay, but for many people, this was not the sequel to The Legend of Zelda. That wouldn't come until A Link to the Past. So when this game came out a year later and people wanted the sequel to the original Legend of Zelda, the instant classic from 86, this wasn't it. But, I mean, 30 years later, how do you guys feel about the game?
I think it's actually maybe my second favorite game in the series. I think this game's amazing. All those people are wrong. I think there's three types of people that hate this game. There's people that hate the game because they don't like the story, because it doesn't tie into the overall story as they would like it to. I'll get into that later. Second reason is because it just changed everything. Like, it rewrote the rules of the entire series, but it was also the second game in the series. It wasn't like it was like the fourth or fifth game, and it was changing everything. And this game was released at the same time as games like Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, and or Super Mario Brothers 2. All of these games from popular franchises went in a completely different direction back in the day because the game developers didn't yet know what they wanted the series to be like, so they were still experimenting. The third type of person that hates this game, I think, is a person that just can't finish it. And so because they never finished it, they never had the experience of playing the game from start to finish. And I think if you do finish this game, I've beaten this game twice now, when I was a kid and earlier this week. And I can tell you that when you start playing this game, it is frustrating as hell. But like most RPG games, the more powerful your character becomes, the easier it is for you to beat enemies, defeat enemies, and for you to finish the game. And I think the journey is well worth it. I wrote this whole article about this game on the website, and I'm going to talk about the ending later on, but I honestly think that this game is incredible, and I think there's so much it did that they never repeated moving forward for a reason, because again, they were experimenting, and there's some things they tried that didn't necessarily work. The game is flawed. It's not a perfect game, but what is a perfect game? But there's a lot of things that this game introduced into the series that has become reoccurring ever since. I mean, it even introduced my favorite character, Shadow Link. And I think this game also has one of the best endings of any game of the 8-bit generation. And I honestly think that this is my favorite, if not second favorite, NES game. I'm still not sure if I like it better than the original Legend of Zelda. And I think it's the toughest game of the 8-bit generation. This game is brutal. It's unforgiving.
Tougher than Ninja Gaiden?
I could beat Ninja Gaiden, no problem. I beat him as a kid. This game is tough as hell.
Where did
Mega Man 1?
Ricky,
well,
what?
I beat Ninja Gaiden 1, but I beating this game... I mean, I beat TMNT, like the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but... Back then, look, we can't really, like, it's hard to compare when you beat stuff as a kid back in the NES era. Mm. If you were a kid who grew up in that era, like, I'm sorry, we were just all better gamers in some sense because we had...
Or more diligent.
Yeah, we had to be really, really, we had to really stick to our guns because you only got a video game every once in a while. You weren't getting them every other week or, you know, once a month or something like that. It was something where if you got a game, it had to last, and games were harder back then because of that. Like, you got to remember they were charging $50, $60 for games back then, which they're still doing today. And with inflation, that means a game was worth a hell of a lot more back then to your parents' wallet. So, yeah, I mean, I can't believe... Rick, I think you're out of your mind if you say this is like the second best Zelda.
Hold on a second. There's opinions, and I'm totally in the right to have my opinion, and I think that this is my second favorite game in the Zelda series so far. Now, look, last year when we reviewed all the Mario games, I played every single one of those games that we reviewed, and at the end of the year, we each decided which was our favorite, because, you know, or which was the best. Not even necessarily our favorite, because we went back, we played it. And with time, you kind of look back and you kind of notice some flaws or notice some things that you didn't notice when you were younger, and you see how it ages. And I think Tim and I, we agree that Part 3 was the best Mario game. Right?
I think you misspoke. We were correct in stating that.
Right. So at the end of the year, this is the year of Zelda for us. We are going to decide what we think the best game is and what we think our favorite game is. We're going to repeat what we did last year with Mario. So far, this is, I think, my second favorite game in the series. Now, I still have a bunch more games that I want to replay and refinish again, but I think this game is unfairly criticized. I think a lot of people just don't like it because it's tough. But you know what the thing is? This game is tough even when you're playing a virtual console. But here's the funny thing. So I was playing on my Wii U, and it was tough. I had to use my restore points. Like, this game, I can't stress how tough this game is, right? But then I went back and I started playing it on my NES. And you know what the funny thing is? It's actually easier on the Nintendo Entertainment System because of the controller. I can't stand the gamepad or the D-pad on the gamepad of the Wii U when playing a game like Zelda 2 because everything's about precision and counterattacks. Like, you have to be so fast and you can't make a mistake, because if you make a mistake, you end up back at the beginning of the game. And that's the thing, like, when you die, you don't end up back at the beginning of the dungeon, you end up back at the beginning of the actual game, and that frustrates people. I think that's the only flaw of the game. But playing it again on my Nintendo console, I'm telling you, man, the controller is so amazing. Like, the D-pad, it's easier to swing your sword, it's easier to fight difficult enemies, it's just easier to play the game, and I had an easier time playing on my NES.
The 3DS D-pad is better than the Wii U's. I've been playing on the 3DS one. I haven't noticed any problem with that.
No, it's really great on the 3DS. I highly recommend getting it there. I think I'm absolutely with you, Ricky. I think the game has a terrible reputation because it was so different and because it was so difficult. But the thing about this game is that you're absolutely right. If you are dedicated enough and you grind it out at the beginning of the game, at a certain point, it becomes very approachable. At a certain point, you can start using magic to heal yourself. So taking some pretty extreme hits isn't nearly as stressful or frightening because you can take care of it yourself immediately. And I think that that's the big difference, is you have to be willing to commit to grinding a little bit, which I get is a little bit dull. But once you've committed to that, the rest of the game is really, really fun. It's this epic battle. It's almost like The Legend of Zelda Dark Souls, where it's slowly battling through enemies. It feels very dramatic. It feels like a sword fight, the sword fight that we never really got in the original game, where these other characters are swinging swords at you. You have to wait for the opportune moment and then either stab them in retaliation or jump on them using your death stab, which Shovel Knight very, very well built upon. I think they took that idea to the next level.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? Remember when David D'Angelo, who's one of the makers of Shovel Knight, was on our podcast and he started criticizing this game? And I'm like, but you guys, like, it inspired you to make Shovel Knight. Look, you know what's funny, Tim? In my article, I was actually going to write, it's the Dark Souls of Zelda game. But I kind of feel like someone said it prior, so I didn't want to do it. But it totally probably is. But Tim, here's the thing. For all of our listeners, if you never played Zelda 2, I'm going to give you three hints, and this is what you need to know if you want to finish this game. Bones. Number one, you're going to have to play each and every single palace at least three times. You're going to have to start over. I've seen guys on YouTube that do it without dying, but, you know, they're experts. They've been playing it for like 30 years. So you're just going to have to go into the game, realize, be prepared to know that you will die. You're going to have to restart. You go into palace, you get the first item, go back again, get the second item, go back again, kill the boss, rinse and repeat. But whatever you do, do not collect any of the extra lives until the very end. Now, this is the thing about the Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. One of the things it has that no other Zelda game has in the series is you can actually find these little dolls, like these little Link dolls that give you an extra life. You want to save those things to the very end, because the hardest thing about this game is making your way up Death Valley to get to the last palace, which is a labyrinth. Like, it's a freaking huge maze, and you have to find your way through the maze to get to the final boss, Thunderbird, who I think is the hardest boss in the game. And once you beat Thunderbird, you face off against Dark Link. Now, the funny thing is, so I was playing this game, and I did exactly what I just told you guys. I saved all of my extra lives. I went up Death Valley. It took forever. I actually practiced it first before I collected all of my bonus lives. Got to the palace, made my way to Thunderbird. I think Thunderbird is the hardest villain to beat, because first of all, you have to use a spell Thunder in order to be able to beat him. But it drains all of your magic, so you can't heal yourself. So you have to kill this dude without getting touched more than twice. So it's super, super hard. The thing is, everyone thinks Shadow Link, it's not Dark Link, there's a difference. Everyone thinks Shadow Link is the toughest enemy. I think Shadow Link's actually the easiest person to beat in this game.
Yeah,
he's this is not even something I read. This is just something I figured out by myself, by fluke, because when I beat the game, it started all coming back to me when I was replaying it. What happened was I just pushed myself to the edge of the screen, and when you push yourself to the edge of the screen, and this works for a lot of the bosses, by the way, they can't touch you. So you just start swinging your sword. But the difference between Shadow Link and all the other bosses is he actually jumps towards you. So because he can't touch you and you keep swinging your sword, you keep on hitting him, and that's how you kill him. He didn't even touch me. Like, it was a joke. And so the funny thing is, this game has a reputation of being really tough, and everyone points at Shadow Link as being the toughest foe in the game, but he's actually the easiest to beat out of everyone.
All right, so here's my take on this, because I think we need a dissenting opinion here. And Aaron, I don't know what yours is, but like, well, first of all, it's hard to even consider this. If you know what Zelda games are and you classify certain games as a Zelda game, this is not one of them. Like, this is a completely different game. That's all. It just happens to exist in the Zelda universe, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Majora's Mask in many ways isn't a traditional Zelda game either. Here's the thing. Like, you guys say that there are people that don't like it simply because it's too hard. There's a difference between something being hard and something being good. This is not good. It's not fun to play. Now, maybe, I mean, that's obviously a subjective opinion, but so is yours. Like, when you're saying that it is fun to play, I'm telling you guys it's not. And I have beaten many hard games in my day. I grew up in the NES era, man. I played them all, and I've beaten many of them. And I don't have a problem with hard games today either. The Donkey Kong Country Return series, those are hard games to beat. But I've beaten those because those were fun to play. And when I was playing through this game, for the past couple of weeks, I didn't play through it, actually. I just stopped because it's not fun to me. The challenge isn't a fun challenge. Like, Tim, when you were saying that you can, if you grind through and you're committed and everything like that, you can beat the game. Well, you could say that about any game that's not fun. If you're committed to playing a game and beating it, you can beat anything. Like, even Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles back in the day, that's not really a fun game to play. We beat it because that's what my brothers and I had that Christmas or whatever, so we had to beat it because it was new. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't call it a good game or a fun game.
I don't think I ever used the word fun, but I used the word great, actually, not good. I think this is a great game. I think it's an amazing game.
Like, no, it's not.
No, but that's a matter of opinion. But I think so is yours. Right, but the reason why I think it's an amazing game is because I really do think that the journey makes it all worth it. Like, I think that despite the fact that this game is frustrating, and at one point I want to throw my NES out the window, at one point I want to break the gamepad of the Wii U, and this is like 28, 29 years later. Like, I don't know how I played this game as a kid without the internet, you know what I mean? But
well, that's
I
just
actually,
it. You shouldn't
actually,
now.
Right, but I actually do think that this game has a lot to offer to the series. Like, I think that this game started to introduce the idea of expanding the world and the story and the mythology and the lore. I wrote this in my article. This game has one of the greatest endings of any NES game. I mean, along with like a game like Earthbound. Like, I love the ending of this game, and I think that's why I love it so much. Like, even when I go to movies, if a movie is like okay, but it has this amazing ending that I just can't stop thinking about, it makes me totally fall in love with the film. Like, it's all about the journey and how it ends at the same time. And I think the journey is frustrating, but I think it's worth it when you get to the end. And like, the idea of, you know, you get to the Great Palace, you have to make your way up the mountain through the Valley of Death, and then you have to fight Thunderbird, and then you have to fight your own shadow. I mean, a shadow's be, and I read your review, Patrick, of The Shadow Puppeteer, which is a fantastic review, by the way. Everyone should read it. But you were talking about like the idea of how the shadows is like this reoccurring motif in movies and video games, and it being like the evil side of like a specific character, like usually the protagonist. And I think this is the first game that I remember having a shadow of the character you play actually be the enemy that you have to defeat. And to me, that's just like poetic. And maybe that sounds silly, but when I was a kid, it blew me away. I'm like, holy shit, I have to fight my shadow.
Here's the thing. I think this comes back to what we were talking about earlier, too. Like, you're very invested in story and video games. And these concepts, like, when you're describing them, they do sound really cool. Like, the concept of The Adventure of Link to me is very, very cool. And I do like the story. And anybody who doesn't like this as being part of the canon, I don't know why. Like, the story is cool, but the gameplay is where I'm at. And the gameplay to me is not satisfying in this game at all. Link's knife sword is not satisfying to swing or kill enemies with. There's nothing, everything is a constant struggle against the game in this to me. When you're playing it, you're just having to outlast the game. You have to go do battle with a bunch of enemies, run back to town and go heal up. Do battle with a bunch of enemies, run back to town and go heal up. Because you can't ever, until you're powered up, your skill means nothing. Like, you can't just become good at this game. Games like Ninja Gaiden were hard, it's true, but you were given all the skills that you needed for the most part right off the bat. But
Ninja Gaiden did not have the boss battles that The Adventure of Link has. Ninja Gaiden does not have the soundtrack or the graphics and or the story and or
battles were better.
And or the reoccurring motifs and or the 9 or 8 towns and or the 6 great palaces. Like, this game has a lot more to offer. And I love Ninja Gaiden. It's one of my favorite games on the Nintendo Entertainment System 1 and 2. I think there's more to this game than just like fun gameplay. But again, it's a matter of what you like to play. Like, I don't think you would play Dark Souls, for example. I don't think you would play Bloodborne. I will. Mm-hmm. I will play Bloodborne.
Yeah. Aaron, I think that's just it.
We got to bring AA Ron back into this conversation because he plays Bloodborne.
Yeah.
Where do you stand with the difficulty, and is this game good, quote unquote, not good?
Yeah. Here's the thing. I mean both of you, Rick and Patrick, but and Tim, you guys brought like really interesting points. I mean, like, yeah, in a way, I'm with Patrick. It's not a great game. I mean, it has a lot of flaws. I mean, it could be just a product of his time. But if there's one thing I could say about Adventures of Link, Zelda 2, is that I think it might not be a great game or a good game, mechanically or control wise or whatever. But I think it's an important game in history. That I think anybody who's anybody that needs to experience this game, because we talk about a lot of the game a lot, but me returning to the game and doing a bit of research, this game, why it's important is because it's one of the first games that managed to make a living, breathing world, in my opinion, because like when you look at the NPCs moving around in the towns. It's the first of its kind with moving NPCs, with NPCs that look like they have something to do. It was the first game to introduce a breathable, believable world. And that's why I think Zelda 2 is probably one of the most important games of all time.
Which makes it a good game.
But
you said it's not a good game, Patrick. So I'm not, put aside if you enjoy it or not. We know you don't, but you can't call it anyone out there who cannot call this a bad game because it's a first in so many different categories.
Well,
especially
wait a second. Let me defend myself here since you kind of said I can't call it that. I wouldn't necessarily call this a bad game, but I'm not going to call it a good game. I don't think it's a good game. I don't even think it was a good game for back then. I prefer Simon's Quest, to tell you the truth. If we're going to go along those lines, like that was a living world to me as well.
Oh,
But yeah,
those are fighting words. No.
That's such a much better game. And if you're going to go with something, and it's just as cryptic, by the way, like, we can't say that, oh, nobody can complain about Simon Quest being cryptic if they're not going to complain about Zelda 2 being cryptic.
But you know what? Here's the funny thing. When I played this one too now, because I didn't finish the game, but I revisited just before this podcast. People got to keep in mind that I played Zelda's Wand of Gamelon before playing Zelda 2. And let me tell you something. Zelda 2 is a shit ton a lot better than Wand of Gamelon.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I think Zelda 2 is better than Majora's Mask, to tell you the truth. I would rather try to finish Zelda 2 than Majora's Mask.
But you know what? The funny thing is, right after I finished The Adventure of Link, I finished it for the second time on Sunday, I went and I started playing A Link to the Past. And you know what? I love A Link to the Past. But after playing Adventure of Link, like, and going directly to Link to the Past, I realize why I appreciate Zelda 2 so much more. It's because it is extremely challenging. Like, in A Link to the Past, I could just keep on tapping my button and swinging my sword, and it'll kill an enemy. It's not hard. It's not difficult. It's a cool game. We're going to talk about it next week. But there is a degree of skill needed to complete this game, and patience, and I don't know, it's not just about swinging Link's sword. It's about precision. It's about counterattacks. It's about knowing your enemies. And it's about strategy. It's about knowing not to use all of your extra lives just yet. It's about knowing that you have to refill your magic meter, et cetera, et cetera.
I called the game underrated. I think it is criminally underrated. I think it is a really important game. And I think it's a really cool experience. I think it is the Dark Souls of its time. I think it gave Dark Souls the idea, only it's even douchier about it, where if you die, you're back at the beginning of the game, like, square one entirely. There is no other way around it. Like, the game is, I think, like, really, really essential to gaming in general and where we are now. I think it is flawed, though. I think that premise of you're at the beginning when you die, that's a mistake. I think that without the features like save points now, it can be a little excruciating. It can be an unfriendly experience. I think the big difference between A Link to the Past and Zelda 2 is that it's very clear that Nintendo wanted you to play A Link to the Past. I think that some people will get immediately turned off by Zelda 2. It is almost an unwanted, unwelcome challenge. It is often not fun. It can be dull when you have to grind. But I'm also with Ricky. Like, I'm on both sides of the fence, you guys. I'm with Ricky that it's a worthwhile journey. It's worth experiencing. I think if you are a very tried-and-true Zelda fan, if you have beaten every other Zelda game, then you should push yourself and beat this game. Why? Because of what it did to the story and because of the potential that the game has. I think that this game has the potential to be a Zelda great and an incredibly unique experience, which is why I think, like, if I could get anything from Nintendo now, more than I want just the next Zelda NX, more than I want Zelda Wii U to finally come out, I want this game to be remade on the 3DS or something, but make it more welcoming. Revisit the Death Stab. Revisit Link using magic. It was such a really unique opportunity to see Link jumping like this, to see Link getting in these epic duels, and it's an experience that you don't really have. Games visit it, like, Ocarina of Time has moments of battling Dark Nuts that are really, really tense when you're first learning them, but it is never as critical or tense as this game, and that's where the game succeeds. It's just like Dark Souls. As soon as you beat that enemy, the sense of relief is enormous.
There's a lot riding on the line, right? Let's say you're, like, down to your last life, and you're like, oh, shit, I gotta restart this whole thing if I lose here.
Tim, you must hack into my computer because you're reading all of my notes. First of all, I agree with everything you're saying. Like, I totally understand Patrick's point. I understand your point, and I'm like you. I'm like on the fence, and I'm observing, like, both sides of, like, the argument, right? But let's be fair. First of all, you do start at the beginning, which is frustrating. It's frustrating for the first, say, 20 minutes of this game. But later on, it only takes you, like, a minute to travel to the next palace, even if you do start at the beginning. It's not like it takes you, like, 20 minutes or 2 hours to travel back to Palace A. B, I wrote in my article that is the flaw. I wrote, The Adventure of Link is a nerve-jangling pixel wasteland populated with images of beauty and horror, waylaid only by its one true flaw, forcing you to start at the very beginning should you die. That is the one flaw I think that this game has. A apart from that one flaw, I do think it stands the test of time. And it's so weird, Tim, because I was going to say the same thing as you. If there's one game that needs to be remade in the Zelda series, it is The Adventure of Link.
I totally agree. Absolutely this one. My friends and I keep making the joke that, like, how excited we would be if when Zelda Wii U gets named, they're just like, it's Zelda 3. Deal with that. And it's not what anyone expects. All of a sudden, Link is hopping around and using magic. It was just such a different experience that I really value that. While I like regular Zelda games a lot more, I would never even consider saying that Zelda 2 is better than A Link to the Past. I still love the game. I think it's essential to Zelda, and I think it's essential to video gaming. I think it's a really, really core experience that has brought about punishing games like Dark Souls. I think it came up with that idea of, like, candy from babies and laughs about it.
I think it's also poetic that technically it is the last game in the timeline. Like, it's long after the Skyward Sword. This is the very last game in the timeline, and it's the most punishing game. And I love, again, how it ends, how it introduces us to Shadow Link, and how, you know, he's one of the most mysterious characters. We've seen him, like, multiplied times four in some games, but this is the first time he was actually introduced, technically. You know, 1987 the game came out. And he is the embodiment of fear within Link, and Link has to beat him. And so we don't even get Ganon in this game. Like, he is the last boss. And the final test is Link needs to beat his own shadow to get the Triforce of Courage from the old man to awaken the sleeping princess. And maybe this is just my crazy imagination, you know, going overboard as a kid growing up, but I always thought that once Link beats his own shadow and defeats the evil within him, then basically he's going to become one of those wise old men that you encounter throughout the series.
That is the end of his adventure.
And that's why it's called The Adventure of Link. And that's why I think anyone who says that this game should not be canon, you guys are so wrong.
That's a completely different argument. Oh, I don't know what they're talking about. Like, the story is pretty cool.
People get just so mad about the game and how hard it is. They don't want it to exist.
I don't particularly want to ever play this game, and I don't really care if I ever beat this game, because I just don't find it fun. But I would never say I don't want it to exist, and I agree with you guys that I would actually like to see the concept remade, like, do another side-scrolling Zelda game.
I think that's just it.
Yeah, I don't have any hate for this game. I think it's like, it doesn't quite get me, but it's not an unplayable mess or anything, and it certainly doesn't, like, it's not sacrilegious against the Zelda franchise in any way.
I think it's really important to note also that even if you spend a lot of time grinding, the game is not long. Like, sure, you might have to restart, and it might take you a little longer, but you can beat the game really quickly, so I would still encourage people to try it. Like, give it a chance.
As long as you don't have to cross over those stupid bubble bridges. If I have to go over a bubble bridge, like, one more time, I'll just take the game and, well, I can't. It's a digital copy. I would take the digital copy and smash it in my mind.
You can't finish the game that, like, some people can because they're experts. Like, there was a guy who did a speed run, and I think he finished in, like, 4 hours or some craziness. But if you're going to play this game, even if you're playing on the virtual console, this game is available on the Wii U. It only costs, like, $9. If you haven't played it, you need to play it, at least experience it if you're a Zelda fan. But it still took me, and I beat this game when I was a kid. I mean, I wasn't playing every day, to be fair, but it still took me, I would say, at least 20 to 30 hours because I had to restart. It was tough. To be fair, I also restarted because I was playing on my NES. So maybe that's not accurate, but it's not. It is a short game technically, but because you have to restart all the time, that is what makes it longer. But the point is, what I'm trying to say here is that for me personally, the sense of accomplishment that I feel when I finish a game like Zelda 2 is unmatched by any game in the Zelda series. And that is why when I finished the game, it was the most rewarding experience for me personally of any Zelda game I've ever played. So yes, it's a bold and radical departure for the series, but I think it's brilliant. And I think that if you do stick around to finish the game, you will feel that sense of accomplishment and feel rewarded and look back and realize that you are happy with the fact that you actually play the game. If you give up, that's fine. Not everyone's going to have the time to to sit there and grind away and be frustrated and have your blood pressure rise to the point where you're going to have a heart attack, you know?
Yeah, I think you're hitting the nail on the head. It's that's what changes your opinion of the game is beating it. And I think that if you're like Patrick, well, no, I'm going to say this.
It's true, though.
If you're
it's
like
true.
Patrick and you're just looking for a good time and you're not looking for a really stressful marriage, then like just be yourself. Be upfront about that. Yeah. I mean, I'm just making an analogy here where this is like I hate fueled fights late into the night. This is what that's the comparison here if we're talking about marriage. Because like it takes commitment to this game and it can be not fun. It can be grueling. But I think the experience changes as soon as you do make that mental commitment of I'm going to defeat you, you dick. Like that's where the game changes for me.
Well, a lot of people don't like it too. Let's be fair, because of the side scrolling. Well, yeah, it's also because of the fact that it just completely changes the game mechanics, and it's no longer all an overhead bird's eye point of view. Like it is in a sense like a platformer at times, and the platforming. And I don't know about you, Aaron, like maybe you agree with me here, but the platforming is what I think is the most stressful or the most frustrating because like there is one moment in the game, and this is when you're making your way through a valley of death, and there is one specific moment where you have to jump, like there's like a lava pit, and I swear to God, they do not give you enough room to jump, like barely enough room, so you have to use a magic spell, but it looks like you have enough room. So, like, the first few times I made it to the specific area, I would jump, and sure enough, I would never make it. Like, stuff like that frustrated me.
Yeah, which was one of the big problems of Adventures of Link, though. I mean, I don't know. Like, just the design of it being a platformer sometimes was just, like, a little frustrating. Kind of reminded me of, like, Typo Man a bit.
It controls way better than Typo Man. But
yeah, that's you know what? I'm not going to get into that discussion.
It's still a Nintendo game, and the level of craft that went into it is still there. Like, it's a really well-made game. It's, like, like really, really flawed just in that one element that if you lose, you're back to square one. That's just a jerk move to any player ever. Like, if you're an indie developer and you're thinking about doing that ever, don't. Like, that sucks.
And that's why I ended my review by saying that is the one true flaw it has. Like it's a flaw no matter what side of the fence you stand on, regardless if you love the game or hate the game, because it just turns so many people off, and with reason. I mean, you're talking about like 1987 here, Nintendo Entertainment System. You know, it's not like we had save points or we had restore points or what have you. That's like really frustrating for a kid. Like I'm amazed I actually had the patience to finish this game as a kid. I mean, along with Ninja Gaiden and all these other games that Patrick mentioned that we finished as a kid. And I think you're right, Patrick. I think we were better gamers. And I think the reason is because we didn't have as much of a choice. So we like, you know, it's either I'm going to go play Zelda 2 and finish the game, and or I'm going to go read a book because it's snowing outside and I can't go play basketball, you know, and it's not school day, so I'm not going to see my friends, you know, so I'm going to go play Zelda 2, right? I mean, that's the thing about this game is I think this game came out like right after Christmas. I saved up my money to buy this game from my Christmas money, you know?
Right before Christmas it came out.
Yeah, okay. And it was like I was playing it in the wintertime. I mean, what else? I mean, I live in Montreal. It's like minus 50 outside. There's like hail, snow, thunder, lightning, and rain. I'm not joking, okay? All five. Like, it's insane these days. And I just want to quickly mention that I do like the fact that it is different than the other Zelda games because I like variety. Like, it doesn't always work. Sometimes it will really piss you off, but I actually like the fact that, for example, Link does not have his bow. He does not have his bombs. He does not have his boomerang, you know, and it's much like an RPG in the sense that you have to earn experience points for attack, defense, and magic. And I like how Link learns magic. Like, that just, to me, is the next step in his life. Like, he becomes like a wizard. Like, I mean, he becomes Ganon eventually. He's gonna turn evil, and someone else is gonna have to try to save Hyrule.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, you're putting words in the voiceless Link's mouth, Ricky. He's a hero to the end. But I agree with you. Like, it's this cool step. It's that whole like concept of yes, this is the Triforce of Courage in action. But, like, what if he had some of the elements of the Triforce of Wisdom? What if he had Zelda's magic? Which I want them to visit that idea. I want so badly, more than anything, I want Nintendo to just ask themselves, what would happen if we made this an inviting experience for everyone? What if it wasn't Dark Souls? What if it was on the same level or maybe a little harder than A Link to the Past so that people like Patrick can have fun? What if it was just fun to bounce on enemies' heads? And I totally get where Patrick's coming from. You know what they need? Me as a kid. Like, as soon as I wasn't having fun, I was like, this game sucks.
Now,
that's kind of fair.
I played through a decent amount of this game. See, for me, like, it really is, it's, again, I'm going to say this, it's not the challenge, it's the fact that I don't think the gameplay is fun. So that's really the thing for me. It is not the challenge. I played through hard games where I've died a lot. I mean, I must have died 150 times on Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. It didn't bother me. I still loved playing that game. This game, it's the gameplay, hands down. That is the reason why I don't care for it. And the fact that I'm dying so often doesn't help, because I don't want to have to do the gameplay again.
That's
where, like, everything stems from that, them putting you back at the beginning, because it just magnifies every single flaw, because you have to do those things over again when you're towards the beginning. You know, I understand later on in the game it opens up, but for the first couple of temples, like, you have to go back and you've got to replay everything over. Everything that sucked the first time getting through is going to suck even more the second time.
Yeah, that might be fair, just if you don't like it. But if it was essentially a Mario game with a sword, don't you think it'd be fun?
Was bigger, yes. If the sword could actually hit something that wasn't just a 6 inches in front of it, that would be great.
See, I think you're playing wrong. Ricky, you can totally back me up here. Okay. If you're not death stabbing, you're not playing right, period. You're not
And can I just say that the game I had the most trouble revisiting and finishing in the past, like, year and a half since we started the podcast is not The Adventure of Link. It was Mario 64. That game is bloody frustrating because of the stupid camera angle, okay? I mean, I had as much of a frustrating experience playing Mario 64, which is considered one of the greatest games of all time, more of a frustrating experience playing that game than this game. So, I mean, maybe the gameplay is not for you, but I don't think it's flawed. I think it's just hard. I mean, here's a game where Link can turn into a pixie. He turns into a fairy. Like, oh, like, you don't see that in any other game, okay? You don't even have to go collect the keys. If you know the trick, you just turn into a fairy and you bypass the locked door. Like, I love the fact that he has 8 different spells. Like, so I love the fact that they include magic. The enemies in this game, it's like, it's not even the boss battles. It's just like every enemy, like almost every enemy is just tough. Like, they are tough to beat.
Yeah,
because
your sword is 6 inches. It's a knife. I mean, look, the bottom line is, like,
it's a letter opener.
Gameplay, what you like and what you don't like is always subjective. And that's why, you know, you listen to reviewers and you find a reviewer that you like. Because for me, the camera, like, I'll agree that the camera in Mario 64 is terrible, but it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you. And obviously, like, the swordplay doesn't bother you in this game as much as it bothers me. So it's just, I mean, you could call something, I'm going to call the swordplay a fault in this game, but you won't agree. And we can both agree that the camera is a fault in Mario 64. I just don't think it's as much of one as you do. So it's like, it's always subjective when it comes to gameplay. For me, I don't have fun playing this game. But I want to stress again, it's not because it's hard. Like, I just want to make sure that people know that this game, yes, game is hard. There are a lot of games that are hard, though.
Calling Patrick a wuss. I feel like he has a very fair argument. It's like, I feel like that's just it. It's like, some people don't have fun. They don't find this type of thing fun because, yeah, you are at a severe disadvantage to the point where it's just kind of like, game, why you got to be like that? I wouldn't say it's quite on par with other experiences. Like, I don't know, some people, like my buddy Ryan, love to play Fire Emblem on Lunatic. And if you're playing Conquest right now, then you know that sometimes that game is just being a jerk. Like, it's just being mean to the player because they asked for it. Whereas I think that this game doesn't ever feel like it's trying to be that way. It just seems like it's maybe short-sighted or short-knifed. I don't know.
I got two more things to say before I go. Okay, first of all, it sort of reminds me of Super Mario Maker, and I'll explain why. Okay, so you know, when Super Mario Maker came out, we were all creating our levels. And so what happens is you sit there and you start creating a level, but as you're creating a level, you're testing out the level each and every single step of the way, right? So for you, it's not very hard because you've been creating the level for the past 8 hours and you've been playing the level from start to finish hundreds of times over and over, you know, every single trick. So I kind of feel like when these guys made these games back in the day, like be it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Battletoads or Ninja Gaiden or what have you, like these tough, tough games, they were probably doing what we are doing now with Super Mario Maker, where they themselves are playing the game so much that they don't realize how tough it is.
I thought Ricky, I was thinking the exact same thing. That's super fun.
And okay, so that's the first thing I want to say. The second thing I want to say, just to end off the review here, at least from my point of view, is the visuals are just as good as the original game. I think Koji Kondo's soundtrack is just as good. Maybe not as good, but it's good. I think, you know, Zelda 2, like Aaron said, introduced a number of things to the industry and also to the Zelda franchise. I mean, it focused heavily on storytelling, side quests, these characters, different bosses, introduces the guys like Thunderbird and Shadow Link. And yes, it's frustrating, but I do think it's brilliant. And The Adventure of Link has real passion, real emotion, real terror, and a true sense of evil. Like, when I'm playing this game, like, there's just something dark and sinister about it. And not because it's frustrating or hard. It's just the overall vibe and the atmosphere and the characters and the bosses and the Great Palace and the Death Mountain and the Valley of Death and et cetera, et cetera. And I finished this game twice, and both times I left physically, emotionally, and mentally exhausted, but I was happy I played the game, and I was happy I played it again and finished it again. Like, it was just like, it was like the high of my weekend. And maybe I just had a really shitty weekend compared to some other people in this world. Like, I didn't win an Oscar like Leo, but you know what? I'm pretty damn proud that I finished this game for a second time, and I love it.
They can put that on your tombstone, beat Zelda 2 twice.
Hey man, yeah, along with my gold cartridge, which I'm holding in my hand still.
When he dies of a heart attack after playing Zelda 2.
Or Zelda 3, Nintendo. I'm like just giving you free ideas. But seriously, I think that if Nintendo could re-release this game, make it more welcoming, remove that giant flaw, make the visuals more fun, and maybe give Link an actual sword, then it would be a very welcome experience to the world. Seeing Link use magic is a ton of fun. And that's what got me into it, plus the RPG element, made it a really, really unique experience, especially since, to my knowledge, no other game was quite the same. Sure, you had other tough platformers, but even Castlevania was something entirely different. So I think that Zelda 2 is really important. I think if you're a Zelda fan, you should definitely give it a shot. But also, if you're like Patrick and you want to have fun, this might not be what you consider fun right away.
Hey, man, it's a lot easier than Typo Man, okay?
Yeah. Typo Man's just frustrating.
No way. Yeah. I beat Typo Man. That was totally easy.
You could get through, like, programming error. I don't know. That game was glitchy.
Or let's just put it this way. Typo Man was more fun to play than Zelda 2 The Adventure of Link. That's why I beat it.
See, I don't.
Typo Man's like the Dark Souls of puzzle games.
Typo Man
shouldn't even be a video game. I'm sorry.
Typo Man was, like, flawed in, like, it's
every way
in its glitchiness. Like, it wasn't ever the player's fault, whereas in Dark Souls it, like, forces you to admit that you're the one that made the mistake. That's the strength of those games.
Everyone,
I think Zelda 2 is the same way.
We mentioned, like, Typo Man.
Yeah, I think that Zelda 2 is the same way. Like, the error will be on the part of the player, and it's tough to admit that, but, like, yeah, I probably should have been more patient. That's on me. I lost because I misplayed. It's the same as Dark Souls in that. I think it's a worthwhile experience. I think you should give it a chance, but it is a strenuous experience. So if it's not for you, then go play Pokemon, because Pokemon's the best also.
All right.
Yeah. Sweet. Aaron, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at the Charmless, on Twitter at the Charmless6, and you can find me on GoombaStomp.com.
Nice. Ricky, how about you?
You can find me over at GoombaStomp.com. Check out my article on Zelda 2. Share it with your friends. Tell more people they should be playing this game. Tell them it's the Dark Souls of Zelda. And on Twitter, I handle the GoombaStomp Twitter account, and you can also find us over on Facebook and Tumblr.
Patrick, thank you so much for being here to disagree with Ricky and actually perfectly exemplify people's reactions to the game. It was this divided amongst audiences, so I feel like this is probably the best way for our conversation to go. Patrick, where can we find you online?
Well, you can obviously find me at GoombaStomp, and you should definitely check out Rick's article, and then post in the comments below your own opinions about Zelda 2 The Adventure of Link.
Or on this podcast episode even. Feel free to share there. All right. And I am Tim Mason, You can find me on Twitter at TheFreemason, M-A-I-S-O-N. I also recently launched a new podcast called Game Boys, all about co-op.
So good. Check it out.
Yeah, if you're really into Pokemon, our Pokemon episode went longer than we ever anticipated, but that's just kind of how it goes with Pokemon, I guess. You can also, of course, find me on Goomba Stomp, where I am always writing some sort of something. So thank you so much for listening, you guys. Whether you love Zelda 2 or hate it, you can sit in the comfort knowing that the next Zelda game we talk about will be many people's favorite, A Link to the Past. So you're going to want to keep staying with us whenever that conversation drops. Until next time, it's dangerous to go it alone. Make sure you have this podcast with you at all times.